The Israeli military launches fresh deadly airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip as a death toll from resistant groups' attacks on occupied territory soars to 800. Iran slams Western countries' support for Israel as unacceptable, stressing Palestinians' right to defend themselves. And people across the world take to the streets to voice their solidarity with Palestinians in their battle against Israeli aggression. Hello and welcome to World News, coming to you live from our international studios right here in Tehran. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Israel says it has conducted a barrage of airstrikes and artillery fire on Gaza, targeting over 1,000 locations. The regime says the strikes have hit many multi-story buildings, causing significant damage. Israeli assaults on the Gaza Strip have claimed 560 lives since Saturday. More than 2,900 Palestinians have also been injured. The UN says the number of displaced individuals in Gaza has surpassed 123,000 since the conflict erupted. Meantime, Hamas resistance movement says its fighters captured more Israeli soldiers on the second day of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Resistance fighters have targeted Israeli cities with thousands of missiles. They have also breached the Gaza barrier fence and infiltrated into Israeli-occupied territories, gaining control over vast areas near the barrier. The unprecedented offensive has left at least 800 Israelis dead and nearly 2,400 injured. Fresh Israeli airstrikes that leave four more Palestinians in Gaza dead in the Khan Yunis area. A few minutes ago, major explosions happening again in Gaza, and unfortunately, we're expecting the death toll to rise. Meanwhile, Israeli helicopters have launched fresh attacks on the border region between the occupied territories and Lebanon. Israeli army spokesman has announced an observation post belonging to the Hezbollah resistance movement has come under its helicopter attacks. Lebanese media reported artillery shelling and gunfire near the town of Daira at its southern border. Earlier today, Israeli forces killed at least two men thought to be infiltrating into the borders of the occupied territories from Lebanon. A Hezbollah official has denied that its forces are conducting any operation inside of the occupied lands. The resistance movement did, however, confirm that have fired dozens of rockets and shells at Israeli positions in the occupied Sheba farms. Hezbollah says the attack was launched in solidarity with the Palestinian people. And, of course, those attacks on Gaza unfortunately continues as we speak. Meanwhile, the leader of the Gaza-based resistance movement, Islamic Jihad, says the only way for Israel to cut its losses is to admit defeat and give in to Palestinian demands. In a televised address, Ziad al-Nakhla said resistance fighters are holding dozens of Israelis, including 30 by the Islamic Jihad alone. He said they will only be released if Israel frees all Palestinian prisoners. Nakhla said the Israeli army is weaker than many believe, and Palestinian resistance fighters humiliated it during the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. He added that Israel cannot break the will of Palestinian fighters now by destroying their homes and killing civilians. The Islamic Jihad chief stressed that these crimes would instead add to the Palestinian strength and resolve. Staying with the story, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has slammed as unacceptable the Western support for Israel in its aggression on the Gaza Strip.
Unfortunately, we're still witnessing that there are certain parties that have always been supportive of daily crimes perpetrated by the Zionist regime committed against the Palestinian people. They are still attempting to kind of change the positions of the oppressor and the oppressed. And regardless of the infringement of 75 years infringement of the Palestinians' rights by a usurper regime, and without taking heed of all these crimes committed in the decades before by the Zionist regime against the Palestinian people. So in the recent developments, they're still standing by the side of the oppressor and go to its support against the Palestinian nation.
Kanani said in his weekly presser that the U.S. and some European governments are resorting to psychological warfare against Palestinians and seek to pose the oppressor as the oppressed. He added that Western governments have closed their eyes to Israeli crimes and brutality. Kanani also hailed the substantial global support for Palestinians and their resistance, including by Muslim countries. He called on Muslim nations to step up their political and spiritual support. Kanani also called for an emergency meeting of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation over the Gaza developments. And more breaking news that Hamas has defended the Al-Aqsa flood operation and said it's a response to the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli settlers. And of course, we know that throughout this year, there have been many incursions by Israeli settlers, and the Palestinian resistance continue to say that Al-Aqsa is their red line. And again, Hamas is reiterating that the Al-Aqsa flood operation is in response to those incursions. Meanwhile, the Iranian president has expressed support for what he calls the Palestinians' legitimate self-defense. In a message to the Palestinian nation, Ebrahim Raisi said the Israeli regime and its supporters are responsible and must answer for endangering the security of regional nations. He said the events unfolding in Israel illustrate that tyranny and injustice against Palestinians and the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque won't last forever and will provoke resistance. Raisi stressed that the equations have changed and warmongering is to the detriment of Israelis, while Palestinians will emerge victorious. Earlier, Raisi discussed the developments in Palestine in separate phone calls with Ismail Haniyeh and Ziad Nakhla, senior leaders of Palestinian resistance movements, Hamas, and the Islamic Jihad. Well, Iran's mission to the United Nations has hailed the Palestinians' anti-Israel operation as a legitimate defense against decades of oppressive occupation and heinous crimes committed by the regime. The mission, in a statement, said the Islamic Republic continues its unflinching support for Palestine, but the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood has been carried out solely by Palestinian resistance groups. It also said that the success of the operation is a testimony of the Israeli regime's biggest failure. Iran's UN mission added that Israel finds it difficult to accept this defeat at the hands of Palestinian groups. It said Israelis are rather attempting to justify their failure and attribute it to Iran's intelligence power and operational planning. More breaking news, this time out of southern Lebanon, where at least seven Israeli troops have been injured during clashes with Palestinian forces. Again, that is out of southern Lebanon, where at least seven Israeli troops have been injured during clashes with Palestinian forces, and hopefully we'll get more information on that situation there. Meanwhile, a well-informed official in the Palestinian resistance group speaks of some Israeli forces assisting with the Al-Aqsa flood operation against the occupying regime. In a report published by Iran's Tasnim website, the Palestinian official gave new information on Israeli soldiers cooperating with resistance groups since long ago. The report says the information provided by regime forces was used in Operation Al-Aqsa Storm to infiltrate Israeli military bases around Gaza. The collaboration was not limited to intelligence. It also included supplying equipment to Palestinian resistance groups. The collaborators are known as the Palestinian Secret Army, that is responsible for taking weapons from Israeli warehouses. Well, the European Union has suspended all aid payments to Palestinians following their operation against Israel. The EU Commissioner, Oliver Varhaley, says that the move will affect all payments and projects worth over 690 million euros until further notice. Over the weekend, the European Commission's headquarters was illuminated by the Israeli flag. Its President Ursula von der Leyen repeatedly has stressed the EU's steadfast support for Israel. Oh, the U.S. also immediately announced its support, saying it will send fresh military aid to Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, Iran says the U.S. and some European governments are resorting to psychological warfare against Palestinians, seeking to pose the oppressor as the oppressed. Well, the multi-front operation by the Palestinian resistance groups against Israel has forced a number of international airlines to cancel their flights to Tel Aviv. Germany's flight carrier and the largest airline in Europe, Lufthansa, says it has canceled all flights to and from Tel Aviv, citing the current situation. Air France says it has halted Tel Aviv flights until further notice. Other airlines either are canceling or suspending flights, including the Emirates, Ryanair, American Airlines, Austrian Air, and Air Canada, among others. Israeli flag carrier El Al also said some flights operated by foreign partners were canceled. The Palestinian mission to the United Nations says Israel needs to change course amid the regime's onslaught on the Gaza Strip.
Regrettably, history for some media and politicians starts when Israelis are killed. Our people have endured one deadly year after another. We came to the Security Council month after month, warning of the consequences of Israeli impunity and international inaction. This is not a time to let Israel double down on its terrible choices. This is a time to tell Israel it needs to change course, that there is a path to peace where neither Palestinians nor Israelis are killed. It is time for an immediate end to the violence and the bloodshed. And it is time to end this blockade and to open a political horizon. We chose the peaceful path to achieve our rights, but Israel continued using blunt force against Palestinian lives and Palestinian rights. Israel cannot wage a full-scale war on a nation, its people, its land, its holy sites, and expect peace in exchange. We have been calling for a different rationale, a different approach. Justice, not vengeance. Freedom, not occupation. Peace, not war. Our calls should be heeded. The alternative is playing out under our very eyes. You cannot stand for peace if you do not stand up to occupation. Do it because it is the right thing to do, morally, legally, politically, and because it will save lives. Peace will save lives because it is the only way forward.
Well, people have marched in several cities across the United States in support of Palestine. Protesters say the Palestinians have the right to resist in the face of Israeli crimes. Get that shit.
Yeah, well, we're here as part of the Palestinian diaspora, and we want to show the world that when Palestine rises up in resistance, the diaspora rises with it. You know, we are an interconnected movement, and, you know, we are here to show solidarity with our people in Palestine and to say that Palestinians have a right to resist. They have a right to resist under international law their occupation. And we've been suffering for 75 years at the hands of a regime that is, you know, founded on ethnic cleansing, founded on violence, and has been, you know, erasing and displacing our people for decades now.
Day in and day out, Palestinians are harassed by Israeli settlers. Not just the government. It's on all fronts, on all forms of life, of living. Palestinians day in and day out are facing aggression, are facing threats to their livelihood.
Well, people in various other countries have also taken to the street to voice their solidarity with Palestinians. Thousands of people marched in the Turkish city of Istanbul to support the Palestinians' battle to defend their homeland. In Germany, a rally took place in Berlin with a crowd chanting, "Palestine will be free." Nigerians also hailed as heroic the Palestinians' Operation Al-Aqsa flood. Meanwhile, Lebanon, Kuwait, and Jordan, and Iraq saw similar rallies. And in Iran, people celebrated the resounding victory of resistance groups and their ongoing battle against Israel. Yemenis also staged protests in the capital Sana'a and the cities of Sa'ada and Hodeidah in support of Palestine. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
The British government's anti-BDS bill that intends to ban local public bodies from joining the popular boycott campaign against the Israeli regime threatens to erode democratic values, restrict freedom of expression, and undermine campaigns for social justice. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Monitor has covered this story and tells us more. A large number of students in a show of solidarity with Palestine at over 20 universities across the United Kingdom have called for divestment from Israeli apartheid regime and urged their vice-chancellors to oppose the oppressive anti-BDS bill. In a statement released on Wednesday, 4th of October, Friends of Al-Aqsa said a Palestine Day of Action had been coordinated to denounce a parliamentary bill that seeks to ban public bodies from boycotting Israeli goods. The Friends of Al-Aqsa said in a statement The anti-BDS bill threatens the rights of public bodies, including universities, to divest from Israeli companies involved in inflicting apartheid on Palestinian men, women and children. In June, the British government introduced a parliamentary bill that seeks to ban public bodies from boycotting Israeli goods, sparking outcry from Palestinian advocacy groups and human rights activists. Under the guise of anti-Semitic rhetoric and abuse, the legislation will prevent public organizations in the United Kingdom from boycotting the apartheid Israeli regime through sanctions and divestment campaigns. The statement noted students from Kent to Newcastle will urge their vice-chancellors to oppose this dangerous legislation, and students across the country will call for their institutions to divest from companies complicit in Israeli human rights abuses in Palestine, including companies like Rolls-Royce PLC, Hewlett-Packard, British Aerospace Systems and Booking.com. Friends of Al-Aqsa added, Rolls-Royce manufactures crucial components of the F-35 joint strike fighters used by Israel to attack the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Hewlett-Packard maintains hardware for the Israeli police, who enforce apartheid on Palestinians within the occupied territories. Pro-Palestinian activists say Britain's anti-BDS bill gives Israel protective shield over crimes. Aisha, an undergraduate student at Salford University in Manchester, said, "As students at Salford, we are here today to make it clear that it's unacceptable for our university to fund human rights abuses. We came here to learn, not to fund apartheid. Our vice-chancellor must act now. He must divest from unethical investments and stand up for the right to boycott the apartheid regime of Israel." The Palestinian Authority's Foreign Ministry has called on all countries to put individuals tied to settler terrorist organizations or companies investing in illegal Israeli settlements across the occupied Palestinian territories on their terror lists. This comes as the Israeli regime has been pressing ahead with its illegal settlement expansion in the Palestinian territories despite international outcry. The policy has seen the support of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist cabinet. The United Nations has already published a list of companies with business ties to Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. The international pro-Palestinian boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, the BDS movement, has said the database was a very significant first concrete step by any United Nations entity towards holding to account Israel and its international corporations. The website of Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. The British government's move to table a bill in the Parliament that intends to ban local public bodies from joining the popular boycott campaign against the Israeli regime threatens to erode democratic values, restrict freedom of expression, and undermine campaigns for social justice. Rani Ahmadi, a legal advisor to the United Nations and the European Union, who previously served as the United Nations legal advocacy representative of Badil, the Resource Center for Palestinian Residency and Refugee Rights, made these remarks in an interview with Iran's English-language television Press TV. The Ramallah-born activist and attorney remarked, "We Palestinians, lawyers, activists from all over the world and civil societies are deeply concerned by the government's anti-boycott bill, which threatens to erode local democracy, restrict freedom of expression under Article 19 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and undermine campaigns for social and climate justice. The Economic Activity of Public Bodies Bill, which opposes boycotts of the Israeli regime, was introduced in the British Parliament, the House of Commons, recently, sparking a massive outcry. Justifying the move, UK Communities Secretary Michael Gove claimed in a statement recently, "These campaigns not only undermine Britain's foreign policy, but lead to appalling anti-Semitic rhetoric and abuse, That is why we have taken this decisive action to stop these disruptive policies once and for all. Rani Ahmadi, a legal advisor to the United Nations and the European Union, told Press TV's website that from the Balfour Declaration to the British Mandate of Palestine, Britain has played an irrefutable role in dispossessing Palestinians from their homeland, in Palestine's colonization and ethnic cleansing, and aiding the world's longest military occupation in history. She added, "We have to go to the root cause of the colonization, which goes back 106 years. She added, "Don't forget the Balfour Declaration, which called for the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. The British had no right, no authority or consent over to determine their destiny." The growing popularity of the movement has prompted governments in the West to curb its activities under the pressure of pro-Israel lobbies, with Britain's efforts spearheaded by Michael Gove and various other politicians. Rani Ahmadi said, "The boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, the BDS movement and other such campaigns have long been used to campaign peacefully for progressive change around the world." The new Arab website has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a legal opinion provided to the opposition Labour Party, free speech could be under threat if the British government's controversial anti-boycott bill becomes law. The advice from Matrix Chambers lawyer Richard Hermer KC was published recently ahead of the bill's second reading in the House of Commons. Like legal advice provided by another lawyer to Amnesty International, obtained by the New Arab recently, Richard Hermer, KC, raised the issue of freedom of expression under Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Richard Hermer, KC, said, "This very poorly drafted bill is likely to have a detrimental impact on the United Kingdom's ability to protect and promote human rights overseas. It is in certain respects inconsistent with our obligations under international law and will stifle free speech at home in a manner incompatible with Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights. It will take powers long exercised by local authorities into the hands of the Secretary of State and will likely lead to an array of illogical outcomes." Rivka Barnard, Deputy Director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, called the proposed legislation repressive. She told the New Arab, "It is no surprise that legal experts have confirmed our position that the government's anti-boycott bill is incompatible with international laws and conventions on human rights, including, but not limited to, issues around freedom of expression."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, or you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
We see from the ayat of the Quran, the way Allah addresses humanity, that the words are meant to evoke a sense of communal being, a sense of being together. Even in the acts of worship, right? We have Jamaat Salat. We know that you and I could pray at home on our own. The reward is minimal. Hadith says once you get to 10 people and above, that if all of the trees were pens And mashallah, you have millions of trees in this province. You just look at the mountains and you can imagine. And Allah says in the hadith, or the Prophet says, if all of the oceans were ink and you have an ocean just beside you, and if all of the angels and jinn were to try to record the reward of one rakat of a jamaat prayer with more than 10 people, the hadith says they could not record it. Right? So Allah is showing us that even in acts of worship, in the jamaat prayer, the rewards are multitude, they're magnified. Salatul Jummah, you can't pray Jummah on your own. You can't pray it with two people, not with three, not with four. Minimum of five, including the imam, have to be there. And again, the more the merrier, the more the people that come, the greater the reward factor. All of these acts of worship, Hajj doesn't take place on its own. It's in Dhul Hijjah for a set number of days. Everybody has to leave their home to go to Mecca and the surrounding area. Again, Allah is showing us through all of these examples and many more that the community is the ideal environment that we should be in. And even if we look at hadith, you know, there are multiple traditions from the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon all of them, that guide us to the importance of communities, that guide us to the importance of thinking about more than just ourselves. You know, I talked about this a few nights ago, how we live in a very individualistic world. We live in this selfie world. The Prophet of Islam shows us that no, it's quite the opposite. And so we all have heard this very famous hadith of the Prophet where he says, "Man asbaha la yahtamma bi umur al-muslimin fa laysa bi muslim." The person who wakes up, the Muslim who wakes up in the morning or wakes up and has no care and concern for the Muslim community, they cease to be Muslims. And the Prophet goes on to say, and the person who wakes up as an apparent Muslim and hears another fellow believer calling out, asking for help and doesn't respond, then we fail to be Muslims. And so coming back to the topic of, as we move on in this discussion about community building, as I said, the Quran might not speak about it directly, but there are indirect ayat where Allah uses words which should get us to think about why he's using the plural many times. If we want a practical example, we have no better place to look than the life of our beloved Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Yes, without a doubt, he suffered challenges in Mecca for that first 13 years. There was no ability to really create a community in that sense. But yet you still see when he was preaching Islam in a clandestine fashion, you know, underground, those early Muslims, they were looking out for one another, right? They recognized that they were a minority in a minority, right? They're in Mecca in the belly of the beast, surrounded by the polytheists. There's 5, 10, 20, 50 Muslims, 100 Muslims. And they were together, they were strong. They would go house to house having sessions. What did the Quran, what did the Prophet get of the Quran? And they would read those ayat, they would memorize, they would try and learn those verses. They would have these little private sessions, getting to know Islam, getting to know the Quran, learning what Rasulullah was giving to them piece by piece. They didn't have a jamaat in terms of an organization and a mosque to go to and programs that we have today and we have the ability to have because of the freedoms that this country has apparently given to us. But they had that sense of love and commitment to one another, right? They were concerned about one another. They tried to do what they could. They tried to, for example, buy people. If they're enslaved and they were Muslims, they would try and buy those people out of slavery. They worked together. You know, much like many of our communities did when we came to Canada initially in the 60s and 70s, we worked together because we were an extreme minority. But then things began to change and people began to get separated for whatever reasons. And we see where we are in the world today and in Canada today. So the Prophet did this initial community building as much as was possible in Mecca. But then he moves to Medina after 13 years of hardship and struggle and efforts. The opportunity comes to move to a new land, to establish a government, to establish a system where he becomes the head of state. And one of the first things that he does, as we know, is to build the masjid, what was known as Masjid al-Nabawi, the Mosque of the Prophet in Medina. And you know, you look at the history of this masjid, initially it was used for everything. People would come and pray. In fact, you had people who would even sleep in the masjid. They're known as Ashab al-Suffa, right? Suffa is actually, interestingly enough, the same word where we get the name or the word sofa. Now you have a sofa at home. Actually, it comes from Suffa, and it was made into English into sofa. So anyways, the Ashab al-Suffa were the homeless people of the community. Homeless Muslims who didn't have money to build a home in Medina to live, and they are allowed to live and sleep and, you know, be there in the mosque full time. Eventually, Allah said, no, now the masjid is a place of worship. These homeless people need to get on their own two feet. They need to have a, you know, establish a life and do for themselves. But early on, the masjid was the focal point of the community. The homeless had a place to sleep there. The Prophet would adjudicate. Issues of dispute came up amongst the community. The Prophet would be there to listen to the people, to pass verdict, to be the judge. People were in the masjid, not just to pray Fajr and this and then leave. No, it was again the focal point, the hub of the community. And I think that's one area where we have drifted, and maybe because of our busy lifestyles in Canada, that we don't give the masjid the importance. You know, traditionally, many of our centers, and I've technically been coast to coast because I lived in Halifax with the community, and I've lived in Vancouver with the community. Now I just have to move to Yellowknife and be with the northern community and go back home. But I've been from coast to coast. And unfortunately, our centers don't remain open, right? They're there for an hour, the door opens, we pray, and then you're told, okay, get going because the custodian has to go and do other stuff. And I get it, in the lifestyle that we lead, maybe it's not practical. But when I see other Muslims and keep their masjid open 24 hours and they literally have a sign, turn the lights off when you leave. Right? Just 2 weeks ago, we were in Niagara Falls. And we stopped in St. Catharines to pray Dhuhr Asr. Beautiful masjid, Masjid al-Nur, I think it's called. And literally there's a sign on the door that if you're the last one to leave, just turn the lights off and lock the door. Because the door is open all day until the end of Isha prayers. There's no custodian there except for Allah. Right? There's no security cameras, nothing except Allah to protect the building. But if other Muslims can have a center which is open 24 hours a day, or at least for the good part of the entire daytime hour, and people can come and have jamaat or pray on their own and begin to establish a foundation of a community, of a jamaat, then I would say it's even possible for us even in this part of the world, in our communities. And so one of the things, as I say, that the Prophet did is establish this community of believers. He had the masjid as the focal point of the community. He didn't allow others to create friction in the community. We know the story of Masjid al-Dhirara, referred to in chapter 9, Surah At-Tawbah, where a competing masjid was built by the hypocrites. And although in Islam it's haram to destroy a masjid, and if you have to demolish a masjid to build a new one, then we are told in the fiqh that you need to use the wood, the concrete, whatever was in the original building, and somehow it has to be repurposed into the new building. But when it came to Masjid al-Dhirara, because this was a mosque that was built on other than taqwa, on other than the foundation of piety, Allah told the Prophet that you have the right to destroy this masjid. And historians mention that not only was it leveled to the ground, but the wood used, or the palm fiber, were burnt. And the ashes were strewn. Right? So Islam, this one example, and this one verse shows us that Islam does not take favorably to disunity in a community, to competing masjids being set up. Now there's no problem with two masjids in a city, because you may have it like in Toronto. The greater Toronto area is 100 kilometers, let's say, from east to west. You can't have one masjid because the city is just too big. But if you build a center and then somebody builds a competing masjid or Imam Barga across the street because they got into political difference or, you know, ideological in terms of cultural background, then that's a problem, because you're disrupting the community. You're disrupting an opportunity to have harmony and unity within the mu'mineen.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas has said it has enough Israeli captives to free all Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Al Jazeera television network has covered this story and tells us more. A senior Hamas leader has said that the group has captured enough Israeli soldiers during an unprecedented attack against Israel to make Israeli authorities free all Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. "We managed to kill and capture many Israeli soldiers. The fighting is still ongoing," Saleh Al-Aruri, the deputy chief of Hamas's political bureau, told Al Jazeera television network on Saturday, 7th of October. "Our detainees in Israeli prisons, their freedom is looming large. What we have in our hands will release all of our prisoners. The longer the fighting continues, the higher the number of prisoners will become," Saleh Al-Aruri added. Senior officers were among those which have been captured by Hamas, but Aruri did not provide any figures. According to the latest figures by Adamir, a prisoners' rights group NGO, nearly 5,200 Palestinians are in Israeli jails, including 33 Palestinian women, 170 minors and children, and more than 1,200 placed under administrative detention. The Israeli army has acknowledged soldiers and commanders have been killed and prisoners of war have been taken. It has not given any figures. The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas, the group running the besieged Gaza Strip, launched the biggest operation on Israel in years on Saturday, 7th of October, killing dozens of people and wounding hundreds after fighters crossed into Israel under the cover of barrage of rockets fired from the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Hamas's social media accounts posted footage of what were said to be Israeli captives moved alive into the Gaza Strip. The surprise operation from Gaza came on the heels of the killing of four Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, widespread Israeli settler attacks on Palestinians, especially in Huwara near Nablus, and increased tensions at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied eastern Al-Quds. Speaking to the Al Jazeera network, Saleh Al-Aruri said, Hamas is engaged in a battle for freedom. This is not a hit-and-run operation. We started an all-out battle. We expect fighting to continue and a fighting front to expand. We have one prime target, our freedom and the freedom of our holy sites. Al-Aruri said Palestinians have a right to freedom, to fight the Israeli occupation and to safeguard their holy sites. We will continue to fight until we are rewarded with victory, freedom and independence, he said. As observers noted that a land invasion by Israel could be imminent, Hamas said it is ready for the worst-case scenario. All scenarios are now possible, and we are ready for an Israeli land invasion, Saleh Al-Aruri added. Al-Aruri also said that Israel had been planning to launch an attack on the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Earlier, Israel's extremist Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said his country is at war, while Palestinian officials say ending the Israeli occupation of their territory is the only guarantee for security, stability and peace in the region. Iran's Press TV has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Palestinian Hamas resistance movement says the number of Israelis taken captive in the ongoing operation against the regime is far more than dozens that was claimed by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Abu Obeidah, the spokesman for the Gaza Strip-based Hamas movement's military wing, the Zedin al-Qassam Brigades, provided the information in a recorded message aired shortly after midnight on Sunday. Today, you talked about dozens of prisoners, and we reassure you, Netanyahu, that your prisoners are many times more than this number, and you must keep track of your soldiers well, he said. These prisoners are present in all areas of Gaza, and everything that happens to our people in the Gaza Strip is happening to them, the Hamas spokesman added. The movement's fighters have captured a great number of Israeli forces and settlers since early Saturday, 7th of October, when they launched Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, the biggest to be carried out by Palestinian resistance groups against the Israeli occupying regime in years. Palestinians have launched their biggest operation against Israel in years in a surprise offensive that combined fighters crossing the fence into Israel, occupied cities, with a heavy barrage of rockets from the Gaza Strip. It has featured heavy rocket barrages and surprise attacks by Palestinian resistance fighters against Israeli forces and settlers in the occupied territories. So far, around 300 Israelis have died as a result of the operation, and thousands of others have been injured, hundreds of them critically. Palestinian resistance leaders have described the operation as a decisive answer to the Israeli regime's unabated campaign of bloodshed and destruction against the Palestinians. The head of the political bureau of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, says the resistance group is on the verge of a great victory following its surprise offensive against Israeli-occupied territories. Elsewhere in his remarks, the spokesman for Hamas's military wing, the Ezzedine al-Qassam Brigades, Abu Obeidah, says threatening Gaza is a losing game. Abu Obeidah also reacted to remarks by Benjamin Netanyahu in which he alleged that Israel is about to use all its force to destroy military capabilities of both Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement. Emphasizing that Netanyahu's speech indicated a deep crisis for the Israeli entity, Abu Obeidah said threatening Gaza is a losing game. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister says the ongoing operation launched by Palestinian resistance groups against Israel is an outcome of the Zionist regime's incessant crimes against the Palestinian people. The Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian was speaking in a phone call with his Turkish counterpart, Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan, on Saturday, 7th of October. His remarks came after earlier in the day, Hamas resistance fighters broke out of the fences separating Gaza and the Palestinian territories and infiltrated a number of towns and settlements. A heavy barrage of more than 7,000 rockets was also fired from the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement said its fighters have joined the operation as Hamas called on Palestinians everywhere to fight and to resistance groups in Lebanon to join the fighting against Israel. According to Israeli media, at least 300 Israelis have been killed and nearly 1,500 injured following the large-scale surprise operation. The Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian told his Turkish counterpart Hakan Fidan that the Palestinian resistance operation is a spontaneous move and the result of the Zionist regime's incessant crimes against Palestine. Amir Abdollahian urged all Muslim countries to remain united in support of the wholly occupied city of Al-Quds, as well as the oppressed and resistant Palestinian nation. The two foreign ministers also discussed the latest situation in occupied Palestine, stressing the rights of the Palestinians must be respected. The Islamic Republic of Iran has declared its firm support for the Palestinians and their anti-Israeli operation, with the Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani saying, "Operation Al-Aqsa Storm was a turning point and a new chapter in the continuing resistance of the Palestinians against the Zionist regime."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseini on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, all praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master Muhammad and his pure, immaculate, chosen progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I profoundly thank Almighty Allah for giving me the opportunity to attend this magnificent, comprehensive, meaningful meeting. I would like to extend my thanks to those who organized this event. Also, I would like to thank the brothers and sisters who presented various programs for an hour or so at the beginning of this meeting. The recitation of the Holy Quran was good. The anthems that were sung were excellent in terms of both the poetry and the music. The elegy was very good, and the speakers spoke about very good matters. Almost everything that is in our hearts and in our minds regarding the sacred defense and its leadership with the people were mentioned by these ladies and gentlemen. Nevertheless, there is a need to reflect on and to think about these matters in order to find solutions, God willing.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
What I would like to say is that the event of the Sacred Defense is a prominent, important period in our country's history. We should understand this period and this important event properly and introduce it to future generations. I strongly believe that if our succeeding generations learn about the important, meaningful aspects of the Sacred Defense and realize how the Iranian nation was able to reach the heights of victory in this important event and to stand up there with power and pride, they will learn great lessons from it and they will achieve great things. This is my firm opinion. The greatness of this event must be recognized. Much has been done in this field. Books have been written, films have been made, and memoirs have been narrated. However, in my opinion, there is still much more room for work to be done. Up until now, we have not been able to recognize or make known the details of this great, colorful painting. We are looking at it from a distance, but if we look at it closely, we will find that in every piece of it there is so much beauty, so many fine points, and so much meaning and depth that one is amazed. Each piece of it is like this, and this information must be made known to people.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.